but newspress.com.
Good afternoon and welcome to another edition of Money Talk. I'm Neil Kreisel, and Diane Duva and I are your hosts every week right here on AM 1290, repeated at 11, and Saturdays at 6. We're brought to you by Cornerstone Home Lending, whose highly trained and experienced team takes great pride in helping people with home financing, offering competitive rates and a wide array of loan programs. Arnaldi's Cafe, one of Santa Barbara's oldest and most intimate restaurants since 1937, located on the corner of Olive and Cota Street in downtown Santa Barbara. And Arlington Financial Advisors, a leading wealth management firm in Santa Barbara, providing its clients with the personal care and attention of a small independent firm, coupled with the vast resources of a major financial institution.
So how was your weekend, Neil? You went to a great event, I heard.
I went to Ha's Sing It Out, which is fantastic, which permits kids to get up on a stage with a great band and sing. And even if they can't
really,
sing.
But really, it's so much more than that.
Yeah, it's about pushing the limits of what you thought is possible. It's like that wilderness group, Outward Bound, where people are testing the limits. But for these kids, it's just an amazing experience. And it's at the Libero Theater. It's a professional orchestra. And they get up there and they sing their hearts out. It's very, very heartwarming.
Definitely. And we have in studio with us today Dr. Peter Rubert from UCSB and the UCSB Economic Forecast Project. Thanks for being here with us, Peter.
Thanks for inviting me again.
So in honor of our guest today, I thought we would talk. First two articles involve economics. And this one is entitled, Fed Officials Worry the Economy is Too Good. Workers still feel left behind. And it begins with a quote from a woman who opened up her own restaurant, worked 80 hours a week, and just shut it down and took a job as an employee making less money than she was earning before. And she says, quote, I don't see evidence of the wages of wages getting any higher except for specific types of jobs like management banking. She said, my attorney friends aren't hurting, but people like me are. Yet Federal Reserve officials are beginning to worry about a possibility that seems remote to these workers who still feel left behind. And that's the danger of the economy running too hot, destabilizing financial markets, and setting off a rapid escalation in wages and prices. And so there's this tension between those who have not seen a benefit and the Fed, who's looking on a macro basis to worrying about inflation. As one president, the Federal Reserve president of Boston said, when we think about the economy from the aspect of monetary policy, we can't get it right for everybody. And that's sort of unfortunate because it depends on who everybody is. And,
right.
You know, you can pick the...
Well, you know those people are Peter's friends. Thanks to Peter, I've met a few of those board presidents. And you've also worked at the Federal Reserve Board of...
I was in Cleveland.
Cleveland.
Right, right. Well, it's a tough one, Neil. You're right. It's, you know, basically since 1975, pretty much, the bottom 10 and 20% of the workforce in terms of income... have not really seen any wage growth for a long, long time. And it's, you know, part of the inequality issue that we're looking at now. And, you know, those middle management jobs are going away. And when you look at average wages, they just haven't changed. Last couple of years, they've started to rise a little bit. So that's what the Fed is thinking about. They've finally risen this year about 3% year over year. It's the first time that they've sort of been growing.
Since the 80s, isn't it?
Yeah. Yeah.
And so it is.
Well, that's for the bottom. You know, the average hasn't gone up very much since the Great Recession. But you're right that, you know, the upper end has risen.
And I hate to sound like a Keynesian. Actually, I don't hate to sound like a Keynesian.
I was like, don't say things you don't mean.
You know, this article talks about monetary policy, but there is fiscal policy. And if you look at the inequality issues, I can't see anything more outstanding as a problem is taxes. If you're worried about inequality, then certainly the tax system, even before the new tax code, which has not, by the way, the rules haven't been written yet, so we're not really sure what it means. But it clearly looks like it's not going to help the inequality issue. And fiscal policy can be even more powerful as a way of equalizing income levels, and yet we're still relying on the Fed.
Right, yeah. The fiscal policy, so far as I see it, doesn't address inequality at all.
And there's a, you know, you'd think that that would be a powerful way to do it. And, you know, if you would just, instead of this, you know, again, this is my political view, but instead of doing what apparently they did, again, I say apparently because the regs haven't been written, if they just would have changed withholding taxes, it would have made a much bigger impact on both the economy and on individuals who have not been taken along on this great ride that capital has been on.
Peter, can I ask you a question as we're talking about the Fed?
Sure. With
this new Fed chairman in place, he was somewhat untraditional in announcing in the beginning of the year that his hope is to raise rates 4 times this year. What do you attribute that to? Because it was always my understanding, it was always something that was held very close to the vest and really depending upon the economic numbers at the time. Do you see that as being a change, or do you just see that as?
No, it's not a change. It started Bernanke when he was chair. He opened up transparency and would come out, and over time, you know, more and more Fed presidents came out to talk about what they believe. Janet Yellen was the same, and in fact, if you look now, there's something called the Fed dot plot, and the Fed dot plot is everybody on the FOMC talks about what they think is going to happen over the year and in the long run. And you can see the predictions of each Fed member, you know, right in the dot plot. And, you know, so that's not new. They're trying to be a little bit more transparent. That, you know, what bothers me is, you know, they say they're going to do it, and they say it's somewhat data dependent, but they never tell us what the data are that they're really looking at. Is it unemployment? Is it wage growth? Is it inequality? You know, all these things play a role for the Fed. So, my view is that his announcement was, we're going to be doing this because we see the economy staying strong, and so we're going to have to raise rates.
One could say that Greenspan also told everyone what he was going to do, only no one understood what he was saying.
That's correct. That's correct.
The next article is similar. It's entitled, U.S. Stock Market Funds Are Losing Investors, and this kind of surprised me. It said that outflows of both mutual funds and exchange-traded funds in the last 2 months have been astoundingly high. $67 billion have moved out of these funds since February. And the article looks at some of the reasons. And the first is that a couple of pundits said that it's because people are afraid of inflation, which will cause the Fed to move, and therefore stocks to be hurt. And it's, and the analogy they use, they want to be, you know, the first out of a burning theater. And the second factor is...
Or a better way maybe to put it is the first out before the stock market starts, a recession starts.
Right, but it's not as dramatic.
I know. Just in case you're just joining us now,
right.
But nothing's on fire.
Right.
But the other factor is that and I don't know whether this article has evidence to support this or because I've seen it before, more anecdotal, and that is that baby boomers are shifting out of stocks into bonds as they near retirement because a lot of financial planners believe they should. I'm not sure that that's right or wrong, but there is a trend for older people to be less interested in capital gains and more interested in income, and that would cause people to pull money out of the stock market as well. The third article we have is about a financial planner that stepped out of the normal financial planning role and has taken on the role, I guess, of a therapist in a way. And that he believes
it's like a pre-mediator.
Yes. And what he's done is he said that one of the things that cause problems in marriages is the prenup. And what he believes is that if you go to someone 3 days before the wedding and ask your intended to sign an agreement, you're probably going to get into trouble. And a prenup should be something that is the culmination of a great deal of discussion about money, about responsibility, about spending. And so he has these seminars and individual sessions with his clients to help people understand the other's view about money, about wealth. And so when they finally decide to put something down on paper, it's something that they agree to and have a greater insight into what their views are.
And I agree with them in that it's very important to know where your soon-to-be spouse stands on money and how they view money, because it is a point of contention in many marriages about who's spending, who's earning, who's where are all the pieces falling into place. And so I do think that it's a great idea if you're thinking about getting married to have that conversation about money. I'm not sure it needs to be a year-long process, but definitely if you're anticipating a prenuptial agreement, you want to broach that subject sooner as opposed to later. As the article points out, that many of the prenups that are given to people 3 days before the wedding, that is a reason why that they don't stand up in court, is because it's almost coercion at that point.
I've been married 49 years. Is it too late to call this guy and ask for a prenup?
For the next 49 years.
I mean, is the train left the station?
I think Beryl's like, you get nothing if you leave.
Right. Well, friends of ours got remarried after a few years, 25 years. They decided to do their vows, and my wife said, well, maybe we should do that too. I said, I did when I moved to California. It's a community property state. You're listening to Money Talk on AM 1290 KZSB, and we'll be right back.
For prospective homebuyers, one of the most important steps of the loan process is getting clear and honest information from someone who will speak plainly and truthfully about loan programs and options.
I'm Kelly Marsh, Vice President, California, of Cornerstone Home Lending, where our highly skilled and experienced team takes great pride in helping clients obtain home financing with honest, knowledgeable, fast, friendly, and efficient service. As a Santa Barbara native who has spent the past 20 years in the mortgage industry and has closed over 4,000 loans, I'd appreciate the opportunity to earn your business and invite you to visit thekellymarshteam.com or call my office at 805-563-1100 to learn more about how Cornerstone Home Lending can help you determine the best way to manage mortgage debt to achieve a more stable financial future.
Licensed by the Department of Business Oversight under the California Residential Mortgage Lending Act. California Residential Mortgage Lending Act license number 41DB072220. California Financial Lending Law license number 60DB072528. Loan originator NMLS number 245822. Not a commitment to loan. Equal housing opportunity.
Hi, we're the Goo Goo Dolls. We're fortunate that we can give our daughters everything they need to grow and learn, but not every child can focus on classes and play dates.
Nearly 13 million kids in the U.S. face hunger. That's 1 in 6. School lunch might be their only meal each day, and it's heartbreaking to imagine any child going to bed hungry. We're dreaming of a perfect day when kids can smile, play, and just be kids without worrying about where their next meal will come from. Feeding America is working to make that perfect day a reality.
Each year, the Feeding America network of food banks rescues billions of pounds of good food that would have gone to waste. That food is given to families and children in need. Being a kid should be about doing things that make an ordinary day extraordinary. Learning to play an instrument, building a sandcastle, hosting tea parties. Hunger should never be an obstacle to growing up.
You can help end childhood hunger in your community by visiting feedingamerica.org.
Brought to you by Feeding America and the Ad Council.
Welcome back to Money Talk, brought to you by Cornerstone Home Lending. Since 1988, a mortgage banker and direct lender that believes in providing in-depth loan consulting to its customers in a personalized and honest manner. And we can be reached at 564-1290.
And we have in studio with us today Dr. Peter Rupert of UCSB and the Economic Forecast Project with us today to talk a little bit about the impacts that the natural disasters had on our communities. And so, Peter, thanks first for being here with us. I know that it's a busy
pleasure.
Week leading up to the Economic Forecast, which is coming up
May
next
8th
week.
And 9th. Yep.
Yeah, May 8th and 9th in both North County and South County. So if you're interested, you should go to the UC. Will you say the website, Peter? It's UCSB.
EFP.
EFP.
And they'll tell you where to get tickets. And
it's such a great community event, and thank you very much for putting it on. So let's transition into the natural disaster. It's been on everybody's mind, and it's had such a huge impact, not only financially but emotionally, on everybody who lives in our community. How are you quantifying the economic impacts?
Well, it's a very, very difficult question. And because it's such a difficult question, we decided to do a survey of the business community. We sent out thousands of surveys. And as always with surveys, we didn't get quite the response we wanted. We got about 300 surveys back. But we really wanted to find out from individuals, how often did you close? Did you close for many days? Did you lay off workers? Are your finances impacted? Did you lose inventory, building damage, et cetera? We tried to find out those things. And, something like 60% of all businesses that responded over those 300, they had to close for, 1 to 6 days typically. And the longest closure had been 72 days. Half of them laid off some workers. Some don't plan to hire back. So it was pretty devastating to the community. The reason it's hard to measure is at the same time, if you look in Goleta, the TOT, the transient occupancy tax, was up 59% over last year in Goleta.
So over the entire 2017 or just the?
January and December. December and January this year compared to December and January last year.
Because we all stayed up there.
Everybody stayed there. Everybody from Montecito. Yeah. All the first responders.
I was calling Neil. Bacara was his second home.
Right, right. And, Neil can probably, verify this, but, many people in the community realized the problem. And the Bacara, I heard from many people, they gave great rates. They were like, we need you, you need to do this. So,
and they accepted pets, I think.
They accepted pets. They did all kinds of things. So I think many in the community have really stepped up.
Yeah, I just want to say that they were beyond just reducing rates. I have three dogs, and I sat in the dining room at a Baguette with two big dogs on either side of me, and they were outrageously nice about the whole thing. They knew that people were under incredible pressure, and it was the new management, I think, that really stood up and made a real difference. And we all should be thankful that they're here.
Right, and the same is true of some of the banks. Many of the banks realized that, some of them might be out of business for a couple months, and basically said, okay, forget about rent this month. I mean, you take care of what you need to take care of, and it's not a loan. Just, when you're ready to pay rent again, let's, start paying rent. So, like I said, I think everybody really stepped up and realized the impact of the disasters.
Now, through your research, is there a way to distinguish the effects from what happened with the fire versus what happened with the mud flow? Because with the fire and the mud flow, I just think of the freeway being closed. Probably had economic. It did have economic
did.
Impacts. And how did you sparse that data, or do you?
In the survey, we did not.
Okay.
In the survey, we asked them, damages from fire or from the debris flow. Most of them put both, so it was hard to say. They never, laid out what the percentages were. But you're right with the freeway closing. Many people couldn't get to work, from Oxnard and Ventura to come up to Santa Barbara. Secondly, there were a bunch of people who had already had planned renovations on their houses, and the construction people couldn't get up. I talked to Pete Giordano of Giordano's, and it's one of these funny things. He said, once it closed, in order for us to get supplies or take supplies down, we had to go up through Bakersfield.
Right.
Now, he said, okay, it costs more in gas and time. But the second part was, because of union rules and the distance, they had to have another person in the truck with them. So it doubled, basically, the labor cost of all those goods that were shipped. So, it has – there's a lot of things we do see. We see the closures of businesses. We see the closures of hotels and restaurants, et cetera. We don't see all these other myriad things that really went on.
Right, because if Giordano's is still in business, it had an economic effect on them, but not visible to the naked eye just looking at the company.
Correct. But hopefully, as we get more data, over this next year, we're going to really start to see what's happened to income from businesses, what's happened to tax revenues. The event we had at the Libero Theater a few weeks ago, we did have the county assessor. We had, someone from the county, someone from the city, the California insurance commissioner, who tried to answer as many questions as they could about, the future.
I think it's important to note that because the commissioner did designate all of whether it be debris flow or fire having a root cause in fire,
yes,
that helped a lot of businesses and homeowners with insurance.
It did help a lot, but if you talk to people, in the the county assessor, basically what he said was fires are easy. What happens is the structure burns down, and we know the structure costs $500,000. So, you know, it's $500,000. With a debris flow, you know, even though you might have had flood insurance or the fire insurance is covering it, no one has insurance on land. The insurance is on structures. So many of these houses are not rebuildable because of the way the new mapping is going to be through the Army Corps of Engineers, that they're just not going to be rebuildable. So, you know, that's just a loss. So you can imagine they lost a $500,000 house on a $6 million lot, and they might not be able to rebuild on it. And the assessor already said he's very willing, and he already has assessed many, many properties at zero.
Yeah, and we're seeing the effects flow through the economy with the schools, both Cold Spring School and Montecito Union Schools, really being, due to that reassessment of property, really having their budgets being slashed just through, you know, tax revenues.
That's right. That's right. And, but, you know, the county said that, you know, it's probably not the right term, but they called it that. You know, they do have a rainy day fund, and I guess it rained. So, you know, they took money out of there. They claim that, you know, the claim is that they can meet their pension liabilities. They're going to meet all their liabilities, and they're, you know, they're going to do okay.
But, you know, maybe we all should step back a second, and I'm, you know, certainly living where I live, very concerned about this, but everyone, even the most pessimistic, believe that in 3 to 5 years, everything's going to grow back, in which case we don't have to worry for another 100 years. So it may be that you can't build for the next couple of years. It may not be such a catastrophe. And second of all, when you looked at risk here besides earthquake, the biggest risk was fire. And there's not going to be a fire here for many, many years, given what's happened up on top of the mountain. So
Right. It's
conceivable that in 2-3 years, this place will be safer than it's ever been.
I don't disagree with that. But what I tried to warn people was when people say things like this is a once in 200 year event, it doesn't mean it happens once every 200 years. Mm-hmm. It's just a low probability event that could happen tomorrow or not for another 700 years. So people have to be aware that, you know, it's just a low probability event that can repeat itself at any time.
Right. That is good to keep in mind. Now, when the county did deem the properties, you know, to be worth zero, what does that have, you know, what does that do for people who have a home loan? do you know what I mean?
I do know what you mean.
And how do people recover from that?
I don't know how people recover from it. I mean, you know, many people there are wealthy. Some are not. You know, many people who live in Montecito,
you know,
are not, you know, super wealthy and can, you know, and can take that kind of loss. So, you know, it's just a loss, to them. And like I said, some of it's not rebuildable.
Yeah. Well, some of the creek is now in new territory where
right.
it once
right.
wasn't.
And what it means, for how to value a property when there's 8 more feet of mud on top of it than there was before, hard to do.
You're listening to Money Talk on the Santa Barbara News Press radio station. We'll be back with this very cheerful conversation.
Hi, I'm Diane Duva with an invitation for you to enjoy a great dining experience at my favorite restaurant, the world-famous Arnaldi's Cafe, one of Santa Barbara's oldest and most intimate restaurants since 1940. It's located on the corner of Olive and Cota Streets in downtown Santa Barbara. Arnaldi's specializes in traditional home-style Italian food prepared with the freshest produce, finest quality meats and fish, and the very best imported Italian meats, cheeses, and olive oil, along with local fish and specials from our Santa Barbara Farmers Market, and an extensive wine list served in the unique atmosphere of a candlelit dining room. Arnaldi's also caters to weddings and rehearsal dinners, receptions, graduations, birthdays, holiday parties, or any special event, with 2 large dining rooms, a huge heated patio, fire pit, 2 bocce ball courts, and a stone barbecue with red oak wood. And Arnaldi's is happy to work with you to create a custom menu and handle any special requests. Visit arnaldis.com or call 805-962-5394.
It's a fact. Successful wealth management is built on strategies that focus on the big picture, take a long-term view, and establish deep and valued relationships. Hello, I'm Diane Duva, founding partner at Arlington Financial Advisors, Santa Barbara's trusted family guide, empowering you to make more informed and confident decisions. At Arlington Financial Advisors, we bring order and balance to your financial life by monitoring and managing risk so you can focus on your work, family, and enjoying the moment. We are a fully independent firm offering strategic financial planning, estate and tax planning, and private money management. Our plans and portfolios are handcrafted using a rigorous and disciplined approach, supported by a consistent yet highly personalized client experience. Our clients look to Arlington Financial Advisors as a home away from home, a comfortable place to protect what they've accomplished while they prepare for what comes next. Please visit arlingtonfinancialadvisors.com or call me, Diane Duva, at 805-699-7300.
Welcome back to Money Talk, brought to you by Arlington Financial Advisors, a leading wealth management firm founded on providing thoughtful, objective, and comprehensive financial guidance for families and entities who are seeking long-term financial confidence.
And if you have a question, we're discussing the impacts of the natural disasters in our area. Please give us a call at 564-1290. So, Peter, on the break, we were just talking a lot about, you know, your research in previous disasters in this area, like the fires of Jesusita or Tea Fire. And will you share with us what you shared on off
air? Sure. We went back and looked at the assessor parcel numbers from the homes that had been destroyed in those two fires, and looked at how many of them had been rebuilt after that, and how many just stayed, you know, unbuilt and vacant. And it's somewhere between 15% and 20% of the homes were not rebuilt. They're just sitting there vacant, and many people moved farther away from the fire zone. Which, by the way, I think that you can ask Neil, but you know, many of people thought they were safe from floods in 2000. You know, a few years ago, sitting in Montecito, just like people thought in 2005 we were safe from the financial crisis.
Right.
Right. I mean, so you know, we tend to think that we're safe. I can tell you that when you talk to the fire people, you know, they basically said, you know, the risk models that insurance companies were using at that time weren't correct, that the fire broke through all the risk barriers. And now what's going to happen is, you know, we heard this from the commissioner, the California Insurance Commissioner, Dave Jones, who was very forthcoming. What he said was great. You know, he said, listen, they're going to be redoing their risk models. We have 20% of homes in Santa Barbara right now who are in extreme fire zones. The amount of losses in California, insured claims at this moment, are about $12 billion throughout the whole state.
Right. Santa Rosa was huge.
Santa Rosa was yeah, five times, as, more than five times as big as,
there,
as
it
big
moved
as
so
this.
Fast and so many structures
yes,
were lost.
Yes. And so what that means is that once they do the risk models and they change how many homes are really in a fire zone, all the rates are going up, by the way. There's just no doubt about it for fire insurance. That has to be the case. They're going to be riskier, number one. And number two, a lot of people aren't going to be able to get insurance. They're going to have to go into the FAIR program. I'm not sure if you're aware of the FAIR program, but it's...
Share with us about it.
Yeah, the FAIR program is Fair Access... Insure regular, I forget something, but and what it has to do with is if you can't get insurance through just standard insurance, you're going to have to go into this other program, which is an insurance pool. They're not regulated by the insurance, California insurance. And basically the rates there are 3 to 5 times higher than the rates you would get. Mm-hmm. So not only is insurance going to be very, very expensive, many people aren't going to be able to get insurance through the traditional channels.
And so you had mentioned that the that FEMA is coming in for flood maps as well, and reassessing or figuring out where the risk really lies in the flood plains.
Yes.
As well as fire is redoing their maps as well. When are these maps supposed to come out?
I think the property maps are supposed to come out within maybe a month or two, or if not sooner. And the reason that has to be done, I mean, many people have come back and say, I want to start rebuilding my house. We don't know a lot of where the property lines are any longer. They're covered in mud. We don't know where the property lines are. So what has to happen is first Public Works has to get there and talk about where the streets are and mm-hmm. the setbacks from the streets and where the rivers, creeks are, et cetera. So first they have to come out and map that. And then everybody else, all the homeowners have to work off of that where their house properties are. So many of them have changed.
Right. Especially, you know, if you look at that corridor through East Valley, Randall Road, Glen Oaks.
That's right.
But you mentioned that it's going to be tough to get fire insurance, and I don't understand that. Where's the fire going to happen? There's no more brush up there. That's 150 years worth of brush that's been burnt.
Right.
Why are they concerned now? It's like, you know, the horse escaped the barn and now they're going to lock it? I mean, why? There's less fire down.
There's less fire, yeah. But I think that their maps weren't correct, I believe.
Okay, but now that they were wrong.
Right.
And they got hurt. I could see about floods, but for the next few years, but I don't see how they can justify raising fire insurance.
Right. Well, that's a good point. And, you know, what the commissioner did say was, you know, for example, when the fire department comes out to your house and tells you what you need to do to mitigate, you know, to clear the brush
right.
away, have a buffer zone, you know, do all these things, and you do all that. You do all these things, you get no benefit from insurance for that. Insurance, they don't care about that part of it. And he has a bill up there now that's basically saying, look, if people do all these things and it meets these requirements, they should get a reduction in insurance. And the same, Neil, you're right, that, you know, if there's a lower probability of a fire because there's no brush, you'd think you'd get a break on it.
Yeah, not a five-time increase.
Because, not going through the FAIR program, right?
Well, but the right now you don't get flood insurance anyway in fire insurance. And if there's a flood next year, it's going to be tough to say that the cause of the flood next year was because of last year's fire. So I don't see what the insurance company's risks are.
Yeah.
There's just not going to be a fire based
there's
on
not going to be, right.
And so if there's a flood, that's not on them. So it seems to me insurance should be very available next year.
Well, unless they can still claim that the fire caused the floods because there's no vegetation there, which is what the commissioner said happened. That's why people's fire insurance covered the debris flow.
Which I think was very necessary because when you look at what the FEMA flood insurance that you can get, it has policy limits up to $250,000. And $250,000 doesn't go very far in rebuilding homes in Santa Barbara County. And so many people would be left without any insurance if this was deemed strict flood as opposed to
sure.
the root cause of fire. So I do think that that ruling by the insurance commissioner was extremely helpful to many people here in Santa Barbara County.
And we all learned a new word, proximate.
Right, right. Well, you know, these issues are – so my first teaching job was at West Virginia University, and I bought a home in Morgantown, West Virginia. And I go to close on the house, and they said, where's your mine subsidence insurance? I said, my what? Mine subsidence insurance. It's because they don't know where all the coal mines were, and they're worried about houses sinking into an old mine shaft. And I'm living in a city. It's not like, you know. So
right.
I had to buy mine subsidence insurance.
Right.
With no risk. And, you know, there was no risk. There was no mine under my house, so.
But in West Virginia, everybody has to buy that insurance?
Yes. Or they did. I don't know about now.
Wow, yeah. You know, I think part of the reason why this area is so unique is just the sheer magnitude of the number of which the homes are worth. And so when it breaks my heart when I hear those people who their land is now deemed to be worth zero, that's usually very difficult to come back from.
Oh, sure. Sure it is. And that's why I think, as I mentioned, that you know, after the T in Jesucita fire, many people were just like, okay, I don't want to do this again. And
right.
I don't know how many times you were evacuated, Neil, probably three?
Five
times?
I have no more friends. I have three dogs, so everyone took us in.
There you go.
And, and even the Pecara had got sick of us.
Okay.
So we're kind of done.
Right.
Yeah. So so what sector of our economy do you think has been impacted the most by these natural disasters?
So a lot of I would say, roughly 50% of the people that were affected claimed to be that tourism was a very important part of their business. So I think restaurants, other places in leisure and hospitality, hotels, they've been very hurt. You know, but for me, there were a lot of businesses, and even though they're on Coast Village Road, doesn't mean that they're highly profitable businesses. And, closing for a month or something.
Especially during Christmas, when shopping is,
and now having to pay maybe more for loans, to fix mm-hmm. their places, to me that's we're going to see more effects going down the going down the road in a few months.
Yeah, a great example of that is the boutique Blanca on Coast Village Road ended up actually being taken over by a boutique from out of town, someone that shares vision, but she said she just couldn't afford the rent after losing 2 months of revenue.
Right. No, that's true.
Well, what's really unfortunate is I was Googling Santa Barbara Pet Hospital last week. And you know how Google works. When you start putting something in, it picks up the most Googled name first. And what came up was when I typed in Montecito Pet Hospital. And the first thing that came up, Montecito, was mud flow. It's the first search thing. And, a great deal of, not a great deal, but a significant amount of of tourism and retail purchasing here was done by people who live in Long Beach, L.A., who came up for the weekend. And now, the you know, when you think of Montecito, instead of this beautiful place, you think of mudflows. And so even though that we may be really, Coast Village Road does not look like there's been a mudflow there, you know, people don't think of coming here now. They think of it as a disaster area.
Right, that
and
might
that's
be
sort
true.
Of the, you know, the bad... It was bad PR, unfortunately, and we're not helping with this radio show. you've been so. Well, let's take a break. You are listening to Money Talk on AM 1290 KZSB, and we'll be right back.
Hey, at our startup, my team and I move at the speed of tech 24/7, and every single day, it's information overload. It's coming at me from all directions. And you know what? Bottom line, I just need the news that matters. So where do I turn? Local radio and TV. I want to hear from people who live and work in my town. They give me the real story with information I know I can rely on. So where else can I find out what's happening in my community? Weather and traffic, things that affect my family and my business. I want to stay informed by sources I trust. My local radio and TV stations. For the best entertainment, sports, news, traffic, and weather with no agenda and more reliable than other platforms. So if you ask me for the information I want anytime, anywhere, I stay local. Support your local station. Text radio to 52886 today. Furnished by the NAB and this station. Message and data rates may apply. Reply stop to opt out.
I want to thank my mommy for loving me so much. For taking me out to the park, for reading me books, for
taking me to the doctor when I broke my foot in ballet rehearsal.
For leaving me alone when I wanted to be alone.
And now, as a grown-up, I'm thankful for being able to take care of you, my dear mom, for having the chance to take you to the park, for reading you those books we enjoy so much, for being able to take you to your therapies after you twisted your ankle, for understanding that sometimes you simply want to be alone.
Roles change without us noticing. And in your new role, we help you help. Visit aarp.org/caregiving to get practical health and wellness tips to provide even better care for your loved one. Remember, visit aarp.org/caregiving. AARP, we help you help. A public service announcement brought to you by AARP and the Ad Council.
Welcome back to Money Talk, brought to you by Alnaldi's Cafe, one of Santa Barbara's oldest and most intimate restaurants since 1937, located on the corner of Olive and Cota Street in downtown Santa Barbara.
So my bocce ball league has moved. We've moved back to the Monday night league. So 6 p.m. tonight, Neil.
And you're going to, but I thought you lost. They still going to let you play?
We're now in summer league. It moves from winter to summer in a snap.
Come on, Neil.
You got to keep up here. Moving into May.
Are there still tickets available?
It's a non-ticketed event. Everyone's welcome. Come on down.
As long as you have dinner.
Or you don't even have to have dinner. You could just have a drink, water, whatever you want. So if you're just joining us, we have Dr. Peter Rupert from UCSB's Economic Forecast Project here with us in studio. And about a month ago, he held an event at the Libero, which discussed the impacts of the economic impacts of the natural disasters that our community has suffered the last few months. And so during your research, what statistic did you find the most shocking?
I think it was the lost days that these businesses said that they had to close for. I expected maybe, you know, one day or 2 days. Many of them closed, you know, for close to a month. And, you know, for these smaller businesses, that's hard to overcome. So that shocked me.
Right, and many of them can't, you know, work remotely.
Right, that's right. And many of them have, you know, we also asked a question like, you know, what's going to happen 3 months from now or 6 months from now? And, you know, some said, you know, things are going to be back to normal. Others say it's tricky. We don't know, depending on if, you know, if people are going to come up here to come to our stores, how much my new premiums are going to be, how much my loans are going to cost. So, you know, a lot of them are still a bit shaky.
Right. Yeah. Which is unfortunate, given an already we were coming off the heels of an impacted retail sector. Anyways, did you find that you know, was retail versus hospitality versus agriculture affected differently?
So I haven't seen much in the agricultural sector, to be honest. The retail seems not to be as impacted as the leisure and hospitality sector, at least just for the 300 respondents that responded.
Okay. And so it was basically hospitality being the number one.
Right.
And then where did the service businesses, you know, the manicurists, the hairdressers?
We didn't have that category.
Okay.
Didn't have enough people answering that category.
Gotcha. And the other thing you probably don't have is pass-through business. People from L.A. that were going to San Francisco, they didn't go. You know,
right.
We don't know what the...
at least didn't take the 101 to go.
Well, it said I'm sure some people decided not to do whatever they needed to do on the 101.
Right.
And therefore, business has probably been hurt all over that will never be quantified.
That's right. And, you know, the other thing that's very difficult in this is to say, so there's this Frederick Bastiat, I don't know if you... So he wrote in the 1800s. And he has something
I'm
called...
I'm not that old.
And he has something called...
This is the first writer that you haven't known.
That's right. What is seen and what's not seen, something like that. But one of them is called the broken window fallacy. And this is... there's a baker, and his son throws a rock through one of his windows. And at first he gets mad and yells at his son, and then he says, you know, maybe that's not such a bad thing, because I have to hire a glazier who's going to come, and I'm going to pay the glazier to fix the window. And then... that's going to give him money, and he's going to go out and buy some food, and that's going to give the, you know, groceries some money,
right,
et cetera. So this is a myth. Many people believe this is going to be, you know, in some sense good. You know, we have taken a huge wealth loss. There's no doubt about it. And the stuff that we can't see is exactly, instead of us paying to fix the building to get back to what it was, we could have bought a new oven. We could have expanded. We could have done all these other things. So, you know, the growth potential is what we don't really see. And so just getting back to normal, we've still lost in the fact that we couldn't use that money to do something else.
Absolutely. And even, you know, when I think about, okay, what industries might actually have some growth potential, like perhaps the contractors or builders or tradesmen in general, when I look back at to where they are and right now in their economic cycle, they were at the lowest levels of unemployment into 2017 ever. So how is that? How are they even going to fit all this new business in?
Well, you know, what you're going to see is higher construction prices. That's what you're going to see.
Supply and demand.
And so, you know, not only, you know, the money you get back, you're paying higher prices to, you know, for construction typically and architectural services, whatever. That's just supply and demand.
Yeah. It really is. Do you see any other industries that you think will be able to... not necessarily, or get more business because of this. Is there any bright shining sectors out there?
I don't consider them bright and shining for the sake that, you know, it's something we could have done. So I'm sure lawyers are going to have more work, contractors are going to have more work, plumbers, electricians, et cetera. They're all going to have more work than normal. But now we just get back to where we were, you know, a few months ago, and we start over. So. You know, it's got to be a loss to the community. And now it's just, you know, we rebuild.
You know, if you take what we were just talking about for the last 3 minutes and get it away from Montecito for a minute so we're not going to get even more depressed and look at, you know, the whole idea of what you're talking about, you're really talking about the only way to really grow is through innovation. And this brings us to the macroeconomic environment we're in now where we've got this possibility of restraint, of free trade or a trade war that may in fact hurt entrepreneurial activities in order to save dying industries. And, you know, to have real growth and economic prosperity, you really need to come up with new ideas and new products. And, you know, that's, I think, what some of our politicians are missing.
Oh, they are missing that. And I think that, you know, many people blame, you know, international trade for these problems. But I have a good example, which is there's this a plant in Austria, and they've been around for a long time. Back in the 60s, they were producing, you know, 500 tons of steel wire a year, and they had about 1,100 employees. Today, they produce a little bit more than that, higher quality, with 14 employees.
Mm. Wow.
It's all technology. And, you know, so unless you try to stop technology, which is a bad idea, you know, certain industries are going to lose jobs.
But if you look at the top... you know, five or 10 equity, any stocks in this country. They all didn't exist 20 years ago. The businesses didn't exist 20 years ago.
That's right.
So, you know, we don't even know what's going to exist. So to spend effort to restrict or to help an industry that's really not very productive in order and maybe hurt innovation is just beyond the beyond.
But, the advertising and political side of things is that, you know, what's going to happen is that Trump's going to come out and say, I saved this small plant in Pennsylvania. I saved 500 jobs. What we're not going to see are all the jobs that are lost because of the higher prices that we're paying for these goods.
Right.
That's what's really hard to track. It's very easy to track one plant and, you know, he'll stand up as a success.
Right.
Well, it's also short term, you can get away with that. But long term, if people, you know, in 2 years or 3 years don't have better economic hope, then I think the people will start rethinking where we are. Already the tax plan has not really been embraced by middle America because they don't see anything from it, which is not a surprise.
Right.
And what's so interesting, you know, in terms of we have an economist on here, for 10 years the discussion was deficit. When was the last time you saw an article about the deficit in the newspapers? I mean, it's just like people just like, let's not even talk about that. Well, our deficit issue is going to be one of the things that's going to hold back growth more than whether we sell any more steel.
Mm-hmm.
I wanted to get a more...
That's positive.
more positive, upbeat note than talking about
Montecito. Can we just get in before we go to the break? But what positive things has happened is now there's a commuter rail between Ventura and Santa Barbara.
Right.
Which I don't think if we didn't experience these disasters that would have come online. So I'm going to leave it on a positive note to be true to being positive.
Well, the other thing we could do is maybe we could...
Just go to commercial so we can leave on a positive note.
Right. You're listening to Money Talk on AM 1290 KCSB, and we'll be right back.
For prospective homebuyers, one of the most important steps of the loan process is getting clear and honest information from someone who will speak plainly and truthfully about loan programs and options.
I'm Kelly Marsh, Vice President, California, of Cornerstone Home Lending, where our highly skilled and experienced team takes great pride in helping clients obtain home financing with honest, knowledgeable, fast, friendly, and efficient service. As a Santa Barbara native who has spent the past 20 years in the mortgage industry and has closed over 4,000 loans, I'd appreciate the opportunity to earn your business and invite you to visit thekellymarshteam.com or call my office at 805-563-1100 to learn more about how Cornerstone Home Lending can help you determine the best way to manage mortgage debt to achieve a more stable financial future.
Licensed by the Department of Business Oversight under the California Residential Mortgage Lending Act. California Residential Mortgage Lending Act license number 41DB072220. California Financial Lending Law license number 60DB072528. Loan originator NMLS number 245822. Not a commitment to loan. Equal housing.
Hi, I'm Diane Duva with an invitation for you to enjoy a great dining experience at my favorite restaurant, the world-famous Arnaldi's Cafe, one of Santa Barbara's oldest and most intimate restaurants since 1940. It's located on the corner of Olive and Coda Streets in downtown Santa Barbara. Arnaldi's specializes in traditional home-style Italian food prepared with the freshest produce, finest quality meats and fish, and the very best imported Italian meats, cheeses, and olive oil, along with local fish and specials from our Santa Barbara Farmers Market, and an extensive wine list served in the unique atmosphere of a candlelit dining room. Arnaldi's also caters to weddings and rehearsal dinners, receptions, graduations, birthdays, holiday parties, or any special event, with two large dining rooms, a huge heated patio, fire pit, two bocce ball courts, and a stone barbecue with red oak wood. And Arnaldi's is happy to work with you to create a custom menu and handle any special requests. Visit Arnaldi's.com or call 805-962-5394.
Welcome back to Money Talk, brought to you by Arlington Financial Advisors, a leading wealth management firm founded on providing thoughtful, objective, and comprehensive financial guidance for families and entities who are seeking long-term financial confidence.
And if you're just joining us, we have Dr. Peter Rubert from UCSB's Economic Forecast Project with us in studio. And we're talking about the effects of the natural disasters that we've experienced. And so, Peter, what are
Well, before that, we had a caller during the break who had a bad connection.
Yes, and we'll get to the caller's question in 1 second, okay? So what are the ways that the Santa Barbara community can help get the economy back on track? What are some of the things that we can do as citizens here to help our economy get back to where we were before.
Right. Well, I think, you know, we mentioned some things before that, you know, some businesses are going to need some help financially. You know, the banks have done a great job. So, you know, just making sure we're vibrant. But, you know, to me, the biggest thing is that, you know, we have to make sure that our community is safe. And, you know, people, like I mentioned earlier, you know, the T fire, Jesusita, many people just didn't rebuild. So that cut the supply. The same thing happened in Napa and Sonoma and Santa Rosa, by the way. You know, people just don't rebuild. So that decreases the supply, which, you know, would increase prices unless demand falls a lot. And so if people aren't feeling safe in Montecito, you know, it may be 2 or 3 years before they start to feel safe and, you know, not worrying about, you know, debris flow and things like that. So, you know, to me, the number one thing is making sure that people are safe, that, you know, that we have the riparian corridors handled, that those are going to take care of any future rains. And once that happens,
they're going to be maintained.
They're going to be maintained. You know, maybe they have to build some new ones. But, you know, unless people feel safe there, you know, why would you live there?
Right. Of course. And so to get now to the caller that we had at the break, the caller asked, what is the topic of the upcoming economic forecast?
Well, you know, as I mentioned to many people when I took over the forecast project, I don't forecast because I don't really believe in it. But one forecast that came kind of true, our board and I talked about this, that trade was going to be a big deal coming up. And so we got, you know, the basic idea of the upcoming event is going to be international trade. Of course, we'll talk about the local economy and things going on here. It's called Trade, Can't Live With It, Can't Live Without It. We have Jorge Castaneda, former finance minister of Mexico, ran against Vicente Fox for president. He was one of the contributors to NAFTA. And we have Roberto Hernandez, who's the Mexican consul from for the Tri-County region. And then we have two journalists, Megan McArdle coming from Washington Post, used to be with Bloomberg, and Amity Schles, she's a writer and commentator. And, you know, both are just, you know, fantastic. And so we'll have a panel and, you know, try to sort of sort out some of these issues.
And this is a lead into the other question that Cola had, which is we have these tax cuts which are supposed to give people more money to spend, but with tariffs as a possibility, the cost of buying things is going to go up, which could more than offset any benefit in buying power, which is a good question.
It's a great question, I believe it will offset. I think that, you know, if these tariffs go through that Trump has talked about, we're all going to face a huge burden. And, you know, the tax cut is just not big enough to worry about for the U.S. as a whole.
So to conclude, we have debris flow risk, fire risk, trade risk,
immigration risk.
Immigration risk. What am I supposed to do after the show's over?
And
where
so
am I going to go?
Aren't you taking me for a beer?
And the worst part is I don't drink. I can't even.
Take me for a beer, Neil. I don't really care if you drink or not.
Excellent.
Are you gonna touch on immigration as well at the forecast?
We may. I'm not sure. You know, I don't tell people what to talk about. Right. They certainly may talk about that. You know, so I think it's a big deal. And you know, many ag businesses and restaurants believe that, you know, the immigration stuff is much worse than the minimum wage increases.
Right.
Well, thank you once
again.
Thank
you so much for being here.
And thank you for listening. You've been listening to Money Talk, and we'll see you next week.